Welcome to the Think Computer's weekly tech podcast. This is episode 144. As always, we are brought to you by Amazon. Go to Amazon or thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and purchase your stuff there. It kicks us back a little bit of money so that we can put the podcast out to you. You know, we need help getting this thing up, and we appreciate anything you send our way. Obviously, with me today is Bob. What's up, Bob?
What's up, man? How's your Tuesday going?
It's not bad. A little bit of a struggle with some online ordering, but I'm getting through it.
You know, if you ordered through Amazon, you'd have a guaranteed delivery day.
If I use that Think Computers link, I would have been all good.
I know. Shoot. Yeah. But yeah, middle of the week here, or like beginning of the week, or whatever you want to call it. Very interesting stuff this week. But we'll jump into reviews because we have three really awesome products. We'll start it off here with Asus's Prime X470 Pro motherboard. That is for the X470 chipset. If you're confused, like I get all the time with all of these different chipsets that are the same, you know.
Basically the same name.
The same name and then going back and forth. This is the second generation AM4 chipset for Ryzen processors. So these will support the newer Ryzen 2000 series processors. Now you don't need to get this motherboard or the X470 boards. The 2000 series are compatible, but some of the newer features you won't get on the older boards. So again, if you're building a new Ryzen system, this you should just get X470. They're the same price basically as the boards that have been out for a year. This is from Asus and it's part of their Prime line, and that's kind of like their mainland general line of motherboards. And this is not by any means a entry level board. We see entry level boards from some companies. This is not. This is a solid motherboard. I've been using the Prime series before. It was just called the Dash A series for some reason. That was a weird naming they used to have. But I've been using those motherboards on both the Intel and AMD side for our test systems because they're incredibly solid. You don't have like all the extra stuff that just gets in the way. And they're really good boards. And then with this board, it looks really, really nice. They've added some new features. They've added larger heat sinks. Which will definitely help with overclocking your processor. This one has a really cool M.2 heatsink that connects to the bottom heatsink on the board, and it just looks awesome. And they've even put some RGB lighting on this. Not a lot, but there is some on that bottom heatsink and then right by the rear I/O cover. So just a good all-around board. It has all the features that you want on an X470 board without all the extras and things that you might not use on, say, like a Republic of Gamers board or a Strix or something like that, that Asus offers. And it's a really good price, too. I believe this board is like $160. I could be wrong. But it's a very well priced. So, you know, if your board is not the most important thing in your build, you really want to spend money. It's actually $155. You really want to spend money on your graphics card, your NVMe SSD, things like that. This is a solid board, and I still think it looks great. Like, I love the color design. Black PCB with white and silver accents. It looks great, and it's a great
board. I actually think at this point that some of these boards are so overbuilt that these ones that are scaled back that are actually the lower tiered boards actually look better.
And I really like that they didn't go overboard with the RGBs. Like, you have them, but they're really subtle and they just look, this is like a sleek, like this, to me, this is a sleek board. It's just like minimalist, yes, kind of sleek design. And I really like that. You know,
I would rock this all day. It's a great looking board.
It's a really great board. You know, of course, Asus, you have great motherboard companion software as well as a really good BIOS that's easy to use. The same BIOS they've been using for at least the past generation of Ryzen, and I think past two or three generations of Intel boards. So if you're familiar with it, it's easy to get around. It's just a good overall board, and definitely a lot of people who are looking at the higher end boards should definitely look at the Prime series. It's a great series, and it's just a great board. Nice. You know, the only thing,
what does it have as far as power delivery, potential overclocking ability?
I believe it has, I have to look. With the X470s, you're not getting a whole lot of like extra power phases. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a 10 phase VRM, so not something super crazy, but again, when it comes to mainstream, you're not getting a lot of that in general on most boards. But they have beefed up the heat sinks on this. They're much bigger than the X370 Pro of the Prime Series. So they beefed up the heat sinks because there is a potential that we will see possibly a 16-core Ryzen chip that would be compatible with this motherboard in the future. But we ran the 2700X, which is 8-core, 16-thread, no problem. Overclocked it to 4.2 gigahertz across all 8 cores, no problem with this board. And it's very easy to do on this board, too. And there's a lot of different ways you can do it. You can do it within Windows. You can do it through the BIOS. It's super simple to do.
Nice.
So, yeah, I really like this board. It has two M.2 slots. The top one is the full X4, where the bottom one is the X2. And you have internal USB 3.1 header, which is good for the newer cases, specifically InWin, that do have the USB Type-C port on the case itself. But yeah, it's a great board. I really like it. There's really not much I can say bad about it. The only thing that I do that Asus does on this line, and they've done it for the longest time, is they do not put a reset CMOS button on the board or on the rear I/O. They still make you use a header, which you have to...
It seems ridiculous.
Yeah, I like so many other boards, they just have the button because that's one of the biggest things, like especially if you're overclocking or you just sometimes, you know, you install the wrong memory or something. There's no reset CMOS. There is a MemoK button and a power button, dedicated power button, which the MemoK would obviously help you with your memory issues. But just clear CMOS would just be nice to have a button so you don't have to do the jumper.
When you need it, like, you don't want to do the jumper.
Yeah, because then you have to find, like, the little thing and, you know.
Pull off the protector and then hit them,
So.
Hassle.
But yeah, great board, great price. If you're building a new Ryzen build, this is definitely a board to consider. It has everything. I don't feel like it's missing anything either, so great board.
Sweet.
And that brings us to a case. It's a
good board for this case, actually.
Yeah, it would look great in this case. Fantex sent us over their Eclipse P350X, which basically sits between the Eclipse P300 and P400, so obviously right in the middle of those two. And this is one of those affordable cases that it's a mid-tower. It, you know, it has the Fantex style. It has the Fantex quality. It has a tempered glass side panel. And it looks, you know, I didn't review it. Ryan did. But it looks really easy to build in. It has, it has a black exterior with white motherboard tray, which I like.
Yeah. Stormtrooper,
And it would obviously look good with this motherboard that we talked about. The really only downside that he said is it comes with a single fan, and I just don't know.
That's terrible.
I think that every case, no matter what, should come with two, an intake and an exhaust. I know that they're trying to meet a price point with this. It does have two RGB strips as well, which is worth mentioning in the since we're in RGB land. You have an RGB strip below the tempered glass side panel, which it's like the side panel I actually like because it goes down to the power supply cover and that's it.
Mid plate,
I really like that.
Yeah, it's really a full mid plate.
Yeah, which is cool. So, but the RGB strip is right below that, and then there's two that go up the top of the front of the case. I think it looks good. I said, though, the single fan is what kind of kills it for me.
The single fan isn't going to do a thing for you, basically. It's going to draw. Obviously, it's going to pull in a little bit of air. You might even be better off using that as exhaust just to get the hot air out of it, but the single 120 is just pretty much unacceptable. You're not going to want to leave it that way. So that's probably just a cost-cutting feature. I guess somebody in like a super low-power situation could get away with not adding fans or doing anything with the thermal situation, but that's use case is very limited. I can't even see them spending like this much for a case in that situation, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's a bit of an oversight. Tack on another $5 or whatever it costs you to throw in an additional single fan for the rear exhaust.
Yeah, I think in all honesty, I would rather have them cut out, even though I love them, the cable organizers on the back side of the case. Yeah. The Velcro ones give us
trade those.
Give us some zip ties and put a fan in there. Would be better.
Yep. I think this is $75. It says at Amazon, and it's still currently $75. Make it $80.
Yeah.
And throw in a fan. I mean, that is the cost, I'm sure, for a fan.
Yeah. So that's the only downside. I think the design of this is great. The cable management looks super easy with that back channel with the cable organizers and everything like that. SSDs are mounted on the back. You have two 3.25-inch or 3.5-inch drive bays as well, which come out of the front of the case.
The front loading drive bays. Yeah, we were talking about this last podcast.
Yeah.
I didn't read through. What did he say about those? Just that they're there?
Yeah, they come right out. There's obviously no backplane. So, you know what I mean? Yeah. Obviously, that
would be. I'm just curious what he thought about it, whether it worked well or not.
He said it worked well. The installation went really good with that.
Cool. It's hard for a Fantex installation to go bad. These guys think through just about everything.
Yeah.
They are definitely top level case designers.
Yeah. So, great case. Definitely consider this if you're looking for a case under $100. Obviously, you can pick up fans for not that much, but it would be nice if this one had the second fan.
Yeah, you can definitely get an inexpensive fan, but still.
Yeah. So yeah, check out the review. Like I said, Ryan did like it minus the fan part. So
cool.
And then it's been a really interesting couple weeks, or actually 3 weeks, with this standing desk I've been using. It's a sit stand desk from a company called iMover, and it's their Lander desk. And to start off, we reviewed a few desks. I've reviewed a few sit stand desks, and this one is the most expensive. So I'll put that out there right now. The desk itself starts at $1,000, which isn't not an easy investment for a lot of people. And our configuration of the desk we got cost $1,453.95. Again, not a, you know, that's what some people, a lot of people are paying for their PC, their entire PC. So that's just put that out there. But I do feel that a desk, especially if you're sitting or standing for a long period of time, is an investment. It's an investment you should make, just like what you're sitting on, because you're being there. You know, you're there for a long time.
I think that in this situation, it's more than like a computer desk. This is really more of a work desk, right?
Yes.
And that's something that you're probably putting at least 40 hours into a week, and you should consider the ergonomics of it.
Yeah, the biggest thing too with these sit stand desks is that sitting for an extended period of time is just not good for you. There's been a million studies on it. You know, it's not good. So sit stand desk allows you to sit part of the day, and then you can move the desk up and you can stand for part of the day. This is motorized. It works really well. And one thing I did like about it is that it has an app that allows you to control the desk. So you don't have to use the controller or any, like, there is a controller on the side of the desk, but having an app is just, it's so much more intuitive, and you can do some really cool things with the app. Like, you can have the app remind you to sit or stand throughout the day. You know, just like having a trainer.
Does it just start standing up on you? Like,
no, do that, but it will remind you. But
it should.
You know, it's just like going to the gym by yourself. Typically, you don't work out as hard when you're by yourself. Right. But if you have if you're working out with a friend or you have a trainer, you're more inclined to do better. So if you have this reminder that's reminding you to stand up, you're more likely to stand up. At least in my opinion, I feel that's how it works. Now, when it comes to the desk itself, one thing that really stands out about this desk compared to the other desks that I reviewed is that, one, you can install this desk with no tools whatsoever. I've gone through the installation in the review. You guys can check it out, but that's a big deal, because a lot of these are being delivered to work environments where people are in nicer clothes, and you don't want to, you know, bust out a toolkit and try to put these together. I was able to install this basically within 20 minutes by myself, which is pretty impressive considering
that's substantially fast. Actually,
yeah, considering that. The other ones that I've reviewed took anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half. So that's really good. Secondly is this desk, the tabletop itself, uses this 3D lamination process which I go into in the review, is really cool. They basically print the lamination on the desk itself. So there's no, like, there's no, yes, like, there's no edges on this desk, if that makes sense, where the lamination stops and then you have another piece like you would. I have links to the on their website, obviously, and I go over it into the review, but that is really, really cool. And they use a CNC machine to kind of round off everything, too. So you're not going to cut yourself. There's no sharp edges. It's not going to wear over time, too, which happens with desks. Like, the one I'm actually sitting in is a different desk, and it wears over time, the pieces and stuff. So that's really good. The quality of the motors is really great. It moves up and down, no problem. Like I said, this is an investment for sure. One thing that this desk also has is, which I requested to try out, was the Steady type, which basically is a compartment for your keyboard that you can adjust up to 85 degrees downward. So it's actually more ergonomic to be type when you're standing to be typing with the keyboard kind of at an angle down. And I didn't really believe this. You know, you don't believe it until you try it, but I actually tried it and I actually enjoy having it at an angle down when I'm standing.
Interesting.
It's just much more comfortable. It's like I said, you have to try it. But yeah, it's a great standing desk. I'm a huge fan of these. I think that, again, if you're spending a considerable amount of time at a computer sitting down, this is the type of something that you should invest in, you know. And like I said, this is quite expensive. It's $1,000. But out of the three that I reviewed, this is the best quality. This is the easiest to install. This is the easiest to use. And this one is the one that comes with an app. The other ones don't. Right. So that's a plus too. And it's just that the thickness of the desk itself is thicker than the other desks. So that's you know, talking about quality of the desktop.
Like the actual surface is a thicker piece of wood?
Yes, a thicker piece of wood. You have less monitor shake. So like the desk I'm sitting at now, when I type, you know, the monitor shakes a little bit. Things like that. So they, like I said, it is a really great desk. They also sent me one of their standing mats, which they say that, you know, there's a lot of mats that are like glorified kitchen mats. And this is actually made specifically for standing desk situations, not made for anything else. And I use that when I stand, and it's great. So yeah,
you got to move that in and out of the way then.
Yeah, if you wanted to, yeah. If you wanted to use it, but again, I use it all the time. The desk is great. It's awesome. I have no problem. Like I use this at the office where I have a laptop connect in, and I have a external monitor too, so you could easily do 2 to 3 monitors on this, no problem. Or you could easily do 2 monitors and a computer tower on this too. So yeah, it's a great desk. Like I said, the only downside to this is that its price range puts it out of the range of a lot of people, I would say. But I think that it has a 10-year warranty, free shipping, all that kind of stuff. So
nice.
So yeah. Definitely
a very cool looking desk.
Yeah, it's a nice desk. It's like I said, check out the review, check out their website. You can read up on all the technologies they use. It's not one of these, like, you know, the same as everybody else. This desk is a lot different, in my opinion, than the other ones. It doesn't just go up and down. It has a lot of features that help with ergonomics as well as quality features and things like that you don't find on other desks. So yeah.
Not one that appears to be the same desk branded differently.
Correct. So, the same OEM, which we see a lot of.
All the time. Too much.
Yeah. So yeah, so definitely check out the review. Like I said, I love using that desk. So yeah. And that brings us to Case Mod Friday. And that, of course, is where we cover a build or mod that's been completed in the community. And this week we have a build inside of a Corsair 780T, which I love that case, for one. And for two, this is Overwatch themed. It's called Reinhardt, and it's from Daniel Twister. Well, I'm not going to try to say his last name. But he's very well known in the modding scene. I know we featured a few of his builds before, and this was done as part of Corsair did an Overwatch modding contest, and this was part of it. And yeah, it's just a great build. Great use of colors. I like the custom side panel that he did with the kind of
CNC in it.
So. Yeah, that's really cool. Obviously, the Reinhardt logo on there. Yeah, I like the front. It's just a well done build, I think. I don't, you know.
Yeah, it's a great theme build. Very minimalistic as far as the actual water cooling and modding, or for performance.
Yes.
That's just basic. He doesn't even have a GPU block on here. But the rest of it is just really nice and clean.
Yeah, it's nice and clean. Sometimes we, you know, people get overboard with the builds, but the top of the case too has like custom vents that he put in there, which is really cool. And it looks great. There's an Overwatch logo on the rear, or the opposite side panel there, which I think looks really cool too. I would love this to be sitting at my desk. It looks great.
Overwatch seems to be like one of the bigger ones that's been chosen for mod contests. It's interesting to me.
Yeah, I believe.
I know it's a pretty popular game, but it's not like the most.
I believe it's probably in the top five of esports titles. I would think.
You narrow it down to esports. Yeah.
So definitely a cool build. EK water cooling with actually an Enermax reservoir, which is interesting.
Are the fans like attached or something? I know they're Enermax fans because he's got one showing him using one of those jank.
That's for the LED controllers. No, that's for the reservoir. So the reservoir has the RGB lights in it that you change with a controller. So
he can, yeah, okay.
Yeah, all the fans are the Corsair fans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, that's yeah. Very cool build. Definitely check it out. And as I always say, we have a full section of Case Mod Friday builds. So if you're looking just to check out some cool mods or want some motivation for your own mod, you can definitely do that. And definitely check it out. So yeah. And that brings us the news this week. And the huge announcement, the big announcement this week, is that AMD has officially announced their second generation Ryzen Threadripper processor. So of course, these are their high-end desktop processors, and I'll go through everything for you guys. The big thing with this is that the first processor will drop on August 13th, which is next week, right?
Less than 7 days.
It is the Threadripper 2990WX. It is their 32-core, 64-thread processor with a base clock of 3.0 gigahertz, and it will boost up to 4.2 gigahertz, and that will be $1,799. So not $2,000. No. Definitely going to undercut Intel on this part. 32-core, 64-thread. Yeah. Obviously, if you're using this for encoding or something that's highly threaded, it's gonna crush like a lot.
Yeah, this is basically like a pair of Xeon parts put together.
Yeah,
that's a pretty massive piece.
Yeah. The next part that will be available will be August 31st, and that is the Threadripper 2950X. That's their 16-core, 32-thread part. Base clock of 3.5 gigahertz, and will boost up to 4.4 gigahertz. And that is $899. That's $100 cheaper than the 1950X. So again,
pretty cool.
Very aggressive pricing there.
Yeah.
And then
that's probably the one you want if you're like a gamer and a streamer.
Yeah.
Trying to get you take advantage of those extra cores, because I mean, it's gonna have faster speed, and it's obviously it's half the price, and you're still getting plenty of cores.
Yeah, the thing with these chips is the WX. We'll talk about another WX chip here in a second, but the WX chips are marketed towards real high end desktop users, you know, and people
like work environments.
Yeah, whereas the X's are marketed towards high end gamers. So the next two parts you'll get in October, so a whole month later, will be the 2970WX. That's 24-core, 48-thread part that runs at the same 3 gigahertz and will boost up to 4.2 gigahertz. That's $1,299. So $1,299 for a 24-core chip. Again, not bad at all.
No, not bad at all.
And then you'll also get the Threadripper 2920X, which is a 12-core, 24-thread part. It has a base clock of 3.5 gigahertz and will boost up to 4.3 gigahertz. And that will be $649, $150 cheaper than the previous generation part.
And still extremely fast for any everyday need.
Yes, yes, for sure. So these are all 12 nanometer parts built on Pinnacle Ridge dies. What we saw when, you know, we reviewed the 2700X is, you know, 3 to 5, sometimes 5 to 7% increase in IPC performance. So you will have better performance over the previous generation. Obviously, adding all these cores is going to really push things to the next level as well. And these boards are compatible with current X399 chipset boards. They'll just require a BIOS update. And we will see new X399 boards launched as well, with kind of overhauled VRM capabilities and things like that for the higher core chips. So yeah, pretty exciting.
This is honestly, it's like semi-tempting to go to.
I mean, I'm
pretty comfortable in the Intel environment, but like, man, is that a lot of cores.
I mean,
a lot of performance.
It's a lot of cores. It's a lot of performance. It is, you know, quad channel memory too. So that's a big bump up if you're on a mainstream part. You know what I mean? I mean, 649 to get into this, that's still 12 core, 24 thread.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
It is $300 more than your average, you know, mainstream processor though.
Yes.
So like,
yes,
you gotta want it. But I mean, for like, personally, I've kind of always wanted to go into high end desktop. I've just never done it. So like, yeah, I feel like this makes it more like, you get more than you ever did. You get more performance at that lower price range.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, AMD is undercutting their own previous generation products, which
totally
quite impressive.
And basically smashing the Intel pricing.
Yeah, smashing Intel pricing. So they're really getting aggressive, which I like. Again, this will have Intel fighting back, I would say, because I don't think we're going to see a high-end Intel part for a little bit.
What part did Intel have, though? Didn't they have a part on, I know that might have been AMD, that
no, they had
somebody
a part,
had a backup part.
They had a, no, so that was AMD on the mainstream desktop.
Right, right, that's right, yep. So Intel is fully laid out there what they got.
Yeah, so
maybe see some price adjusting from them.
I would hope so, because the 18-core, only 18-core, is still $2,000. So yeah,
that's...
With these new parts, we're getting new packaging, which looks pretty sweet. We have pictures of it on the website, and there's actually little LEDs in the packaging that will light up. So when you go to the store, if there's still enough battery left, because there's some batteries in there, that will light up the inside of the packaging, which is pretty cool, I think.
That's super cool.
You know, so the packaging.
It's that little extra, right?
Yeah, it's just that little extra. I think, you know, if you look at this packaging compared to the Intel high-end desktop packaging, it's a big difference.
You mean the same packaging that Intel has had for the past 15 years?
Yeah, basically.
Essentially?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. This really makes you feel like you're getting something cool. I don't care what you say. Like, I like a product more when it has a good unboxing experience. You know, and especially when you're spending this type of money, you like that experience. It's part of the consumer, you know. Process.
Absolutely.
You
absolutely
know, so
ultimately what matters is what it does. So you can sell me the best thing in the world and put it in an ugly box and I won't care. But like, if I can get it in this bomb looking box that lights up, yeah, I want that.
Exactly.
It makes me feel awesome about it.
Yeah, so definitely check out the pictures we have of those. And moving over to the Intel side, you know how we talked about last week that August 1st we might see a launch.
Right. Well, came and went.
Yeah, it came and went. It is August 7th now. it looks like there's been a leaked roadmap of the desktop stuff, and it looks like we will see a Coffee Lake refresh. So we'll see a Core i9, the Core i9 99K, which we talked about, it will be launched in October. So you'll have the Core i9-9900K, Core i7-9700K, and Core i5-9600K. All of those will be launched in October. And of course, those are to combat the second generation Ryzen products that have come out.
Right. And the only one of those really worth looking at is the 9900K, basically.
Yeah, because the 9900K is 8-core, 16-thread. The 9700K is 8-core, 8-thread. And the 9600K is 6-core, 6-thread. So again, the higher one is the 9900K and the one that you would want.
The only one that's truly like not GIMPed is the 9900K.
Yeah. So. And what's interesting about this roadmap is we also see a refresh of the Core X series, but in parentheses in this thing, it says Basin Falls refresh up to 18 core, 165 watts. So at least in the X series desktop X299 platform, we won't see more than 18 core chips, at least according to this roadmap, which is not good for Intel. If they're only offering a 18 core part in their high end desktop, when in just a week AMD will have a 32 core part. So
right, yeah. 18 is many fewer cores than 32. I don't know if I just want to put that out there and make sure everybody gets.
Yeah,
that.
In all honesty, I didn't expect this when Ryzen launched to be this big of a hit, but I mean, it seems like Intel's all over the place. It's now become apparent that Intel's scrambling of this.
They've been sitting on their thumbs for the past few years, you know.
Yeah.
They haven't had to do anything, and now AMD came with this curveball out of nowhere,
and it seems
they just keep bringing them too.
It seems like the AMD product lines are more defined, as far as like, you know, it seems like Intel's changing things around and changing things around every launch. It's like confusing.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
As we get into August, September, October, November, it'd be interesting to see what CPUs are announced and released. Obviously, we know what's coming from AMD, yep. But on the Intel side, this isn't confirmed. This is obviously a leaked roadmap, which it appears to be real, but you never know. And obviously, this could be old as well. So yeah, definitely just stay tuned. We'll obviously keep you guys updated on all the launches. Moving into graphics cards, which of course we've been waiting and waiting and waiting. First up is that the first PCB picture of a purported GeForce GTX 1180 has been leaked. You know. It looks to be a completed PCB, which means we're closer to the launch. That's the most important thing. is that we are closer. But the second thing is that it gives us a little bit of information about the car. There's nothing on the card as far as components. It's just the PCB, but we can see some things. One, the chip seems the same size as the GP104. So it looks like we're more than likely on the same process. You know what I mean? Secondly, you have 8 memory chips on 3 sides of the GPU, which will confirm a 256-bit wide memory bus. And it looks like as far as configuration outputs, you will be able to do 2 display ports plus 2 HDMI or 3 display ports and 1 HDMI. Configuration there. It looks like the card is getting power or will be powered by an 8 and 6 pin PCI Express power connections. There's a 10 phase V-core side, which you can see, like you can see the traces for it, but it's more than likely that it's what they call dumb double phasing. So half of the phases aren't active. So more likely 5 phase with 2 phases for memory. And there's a weird connector on this card, or a finger, which appears to be an SLI finger and NVLink finger side by side. So we're not sure what that's about either.
Some new standard, maybe?
Possibly. Not really sure.
There's no reason for them not to. I mean, you're not going to intermix this with anything else like you used to. So
yeah.
It doesn't really make it proprietary in any way. So yeah, it'd be good if it was a much higher bandwidth version of SLI that would get us pretty much perfect
scaling.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, but I think the PCB does give us some information about what we're going to expect, which is good because we've kind of been up in the air about it, when it's going to be released and everything like that.
Mainly when we're going to get it.
Yeah. So talking about when we might get it, hopefully it's soon. NVIDIA graphics card partner Maxsun, if you've never heard of them, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, probably because they're a Chinese add-in board partner for NVIDIA. They showed a render of a next generation graphics card, which obviously has to be a GeForce GTX 1180 or 2080, whatever. We don't know what they're going to call it yet. Yeah, The card, the render that they showed, shows a triple fan cooling solution. And it does show, we don't see any DVI or SLI ports on this. So I don't know if it's just because it's the render, not sure.
It's just because it's a terrible graphic and you can't really see.
Yeah, but the card looks to be powered by a single 8-pin power connection. And obviously this is a GeForce GTX card because it says it on it. So this is just a render, but obviously if they have the cooling solution design, means that they have the spec for the card to design the cooling solution. Again, we're getting closer. You know,
I don't see a single 8-pin. That seems unlikely.
Yeah, not sure.
But I can't. It's not that great of a leap. I can't see them making that great of a leap, right? In power, in performance.
Yeah, that, power efficiency.
The power efficiency is that much higher. They're eking this technology out because they have no competition.
Yeah, I honestly think it's a render, and we just. It's just not a completed render. You know what I mean?
Like, for example, this is what our next generation cooler is going to look like.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But, you know, when it comes to next gen NVIDIA news, where there's not a lot of it. So that's what we have for you guys.
We'll cling to what little.
Yeah, that's what we have for that stuff. Definitely stay tuned when we get, you know, information or we hear anything about the next generation NVIDIA launch, which we've all been waiting for. We'll definitely let you guys know. On the other spectrum here, something that's really, really cool is that Seagate was able to get or produce and mass produce and show off a hard drive. This is a normal hard drive with real disks in it that's able to sustain 480 megabytes a second sustained throughput. The fastest ever for a traditional hard drive. It was made possible by their Mach.2 multi-actuator technology, which we go over in their press release and everything like that. But I think that's pretty impressive for a hard drive. I don't know.
It's extremely impressive.
I don't know what the fastest hard drive was before this. As far as that, I mean, most of the drives that I tested, even the high performance, were like 170 megabytes a second throughput, something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty awesome. This is not a huge deal for us gamers and even consumers, really. This technology is going to be used for data center and things like that, where you're loading a ton of these drives up. But it obviously it's a big leap in performance when it comes to hard drives. And I don't think that at least hard drive technology in the consumer realm is going away. We're all going to SSDs, right? But in the data center and things like that, it's not, and it won't be for a while yet.
Do you think it ever, I mean, I guess it has to, but like NAND is expensive. You think it makes me feel like maybe that's not the future? Because, I mean, data center is, that's just an enormous amount of drive, you know?
Yeah, it's a
for like a worldwide replacement of like traditional hard drives and data center. Like, I don't know.
It's not even just the it's the like, all the racks need to be redesigned for SSDs. There's a lot of things that go into it, obviously. It's not going
much,
away
much
for a
slower,
long time.
Much slower moving processes too than we're used to in consumer tech. So
yeah. That's pretty awesome. Definitely one of the bigger news stories this past week, because that's very, very
fast.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. For instance, how fast were I'm kind of sticking this on this, but how fast were the Raptor drives? I can't remember.
I don't know. I think the fastest hard drive that I ever tested was like 170 megabytes a second. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let's see. All they have to do is the spin speed. This was before like the IO speed was the read and write speed was. Was like part of the spec.
Because I think like for the most part, when you bought a hard drive, you knew the speed that you were gonna get.
Yeah, basically the same. Other than
So that was the. I think that it typically you saw back in the day was like 75 megabytes a second, and then we like went up to like 120, and then again I think the last hard drive I tested as far as speed wise was like 170 or something like that.
That's about what you get,
because I have Western Digital their NAS drives, which are the Reds, in this USB 3.1 enclosure. I forget what it's called, but anyways, it's their product. And they're not in RAID or anything like that. They're just like a full thing. And I get like my transfer speeds were like 170 on that over USB 3.1. So
right, just straight speed. I think this is saying it's quoting data transfer rate as, which I'm guessing is the read speed at 200 megabytes a second. On a
that would be
10,000 RPM velociraptor.
So big jump. Like
We're a bit past that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was only in like smaller capacities too. So you're talking, what was it, 14 terabytes?
Yeah, that's the drive that they said. So it was 14
terabytes. The Mach 0.2, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool tech.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very awesome. So we'll move on from that to a case that we both got to check out at CES. Inwin finally launched their 915. Which we have the video in the article as well. We each got to check out at CES, and very sexy looking case, all aluminum, with curved aluminum panels on the front and back. But the coolest thing about this case, at least I thought, was the top panel kind of is motorized, and it opens up so you can get air intake. It's really cool. Tempered glass on the top panel, tempered glass on both. I believe it's both side panels, right? The side, yeah, on both side panels you get tempered glass. It's just a sexy case. Was really impressed with it when we saw it at CES, and it fits everything. Extended ATX motherboards, the longest graphics cards out there, CPU cooler is 168 millimeters, so pretty high CPU cooler, room for SSDs, room for hard drives, room for everything in this thing. You can build a really awesome system with this.
Yeah, definitely. Inwin is like the last bastion of the full size case. It seems like almost they're not. They're definitely not. There's definitely case companies that make big cases still, but they're definitely the ones that are still making like a flagship every year that's in the full size case. The interesting thing about this one though is that like, so you build it all up, like you build that massive system in it. Like really, the airflow on this case is not great, even with that thing popped.
That is the kind of quintessential Inwin thing. is not good airflow on awesome cases. The airflow doesn't look great. I mean, that entire front is closed off. I believe there's like a grate at the bottom of it, but that's still not going to give you great airflow. The rear has like the cutouts in it. But
that's mostly IO.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great. That's just, you know, that's Inwin.
Yeah.
And then no word on pricing yet, but it should be around $500.
Okay.
So pretty expensive.
I feel like reading this article, reading the finish of it, I felt like I was reading a CES article. It's funny. Word yet on pricing. Should be in the $500 range.
Yeah. So we'll move on to gaming news, and we have some interesting articles this week. The biggest one is that Steam is having its biggest user decline in years. So basically, like all, like even our website traffic and just it, users in general, when it comes to tech things, is that Steam's user numbers, they kind of peak in January. You know, that's when everybody, it's cold out, everybody's home for the holidays, all that kind of stuff. And yep. they decline throughout the summer. That's
which is probably good that people are still getting outside, right?
Yes, okay. Very much so. That's kind of what, like I said, what happens with our website traffic numbers and all that stuff too. It just happens. The decline is much more significant compared to previous years. The numbers have gone down by 17% compared to 9 last year, which is a big difference.
I'm nearly double.
Yeah. So that is pretty huge. You know, you could say that one of the big reasons for that is Fortnite, because you don't use Steam to play Fortnite. Right. You use the Epic Games Launcher. And even there's been a research that's found evidence that Fortnite is pulling players from other games. So you're seeing less stream views on other games, as well as digital spending across other games has been down because of Fortnite. That's a big thing. I think a lot of people have moved over to Fortnite from PUBG too.
Yeah, not most, but a lot.
Yeah, and PUBG has even cut the price down to $19.99 instead of $29.99 for the game. But this is the biggest Steam decline in user counts that we've seen in years. So I wouldn't say they're in trouble. I don't think they're in trouble by any means, because I don't really know what their overhead is, but it can't be a lot because they're not making the games. You know, Steam doesn't make games anymore.
No.
it's quite interesting. It's very interesting that, you know, one game can disrupt this much, but I think it really is.
Yeah. Like your article says, it's a combination of PUBG's numbers dropping, so like that's fallout from them, and then Fortnite and pulling from other games as well, as you said. So it's the combination, and some are at the same time. So
it was probably
you're looking at big numbers from earlier in the year for PUBG as well.
That's kind of when the game peaked, was, you know, right around the end of last year, early this year.
Yeah. So that's probably unfortunate for the numbers side of things. Because PUBG, I mean, it's not massive. Even at its peak, it wasn't massive compared to Fortnite. But it was pretty freaking big before Fortnite came out.
Yeah, I mean, before Battle Royale was released, I believe PUBG was one of the most played games in the world. I'm pretty sure it was. It's unfortunate for the numbers and all that. But you're just seeing the effect of, of all
Steam
that.
Will be fine, though. The Fortnite bubble will pop eventually.
Yeah.
The new thing will happen. Steam will be fine. No worries for Steam.
Well, talking about Steam, it looks like a massive publisher is deciding to not release their next game on Steam. Bethesda will have their own launcher for Fallout 76 on PC, which is quite interesting. For a lot of small publishers, it just makes sense to use Steam. You get the digital distribution service, you get the being listed on Steam and making it easy for gamers to find your game. But obviously, when you do that, Steam gets a cut of every sale. I don't know what the percentage is. I'm not sure. Probably between 15% and 30%, I would think.
Depending on your bargaining power.
Yes. But Bethesda is saying we're going to do our own thing, and obviously they have the money to put into their own digital distribution service. Fallout 76, which looks like a pretty good game, actually. If you watch their E3 trailer, it looked pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. It will only be available with, I assume they're going to have a launcher And if it works out, I assume they'll put all their other games on it as well. So,
I mean, after seeing the success of other studios, I'm sure they're trying to just follow suit.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Other studios their size, I should say. The thing about this to me is that honestly, I'd rather use Steam because I hate having all the launchers.
Yeah, yeah. It's the big question is it cheaper to create and build your own digital distribution service than it is to pay Steam that percentage?
Right.
You know, with big games like this, with a big game like this, if you think about that percentage over your sales, I mean, that's a big number.
Very, yeah.
You know, so, yeah. So yeah, I guess.
So that's a really good question.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they've, I'm sure they've worked that out. So.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's why they're doing this. I mean, yeah. You know, so.
For them, they decided it was worth it.
Yes. So, going back to Fortnite, it looks like parents are paying for lessons for Fortnite lessons for their kids. You know, when I grew up,
this is crazy.
I got lessons to play the saxophone.
I got soccer lessons.
Yeah. So, you know, esports is huge. You know, we don't see it as much because we're adults, but I mean, I would say a good percentage of Fortnite's user base is probably what, 10 to 16 year olds, you think?
Yeah, probably.
And obviously, it's a big deal for them. I think that gaming is mainstream. It, you're not looked at weird and all that. And, you know, they want to.
What a time.
You know, everybody, all these kids want to be ninja. You know what I mean? And that's somebody that they look up to. So their parents will pay for these lessons.
Yeah. It's so cool for them.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So lessons can go from anywhere from $20 to $50 an hour. And I think this is really great for players who are good and streamers who are good to create extra revenue for themselves.
Yeah, it's definitely a great alternate revenue stream to just streaming.
Yes. You know, if you're good at the game, and obviously you can prove that you're good and you can, you know, have a good sales pitch to get customers like this, it's a good way to add extra money and you're getting paid to play a game. So yeah, really, really cool. I think that's awesome, honestly. Maybe we'll see more things like this as gaming becomes more and more and more mainstream. So that's pretty awesome.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yes. So that is the news for this week, and we'll move on to the reviews that we have coming up. So I'll be taking a look at the MSI B450i Gaming Plus AC motherboard. The B450, of course, is the less expensive chipset for the Ryzen Refresh. This board is a mini ITX board, super, super small, but it still gives you a lot in a small package. You do have you obviously have that dedicated X16 slot for graphics. You have support for dual channel memory. You have an M.2 slot on the back of the board. You have two RGB headers on this too. So if you still want to RGB out your case and control it with the MSI controls, you can do that. This has 802.11 AC Wi-Fi, USB 3.1. I mean, it has everything. In a super small package, looks great. So yeah, I'm excited to check that out. Really cool board. I was playing with it today. And so cool stuff there. And then I'll also be taking a look at a keyboard from a company that we've never worked with before. And it's a company that was started by a gaming, what would you call it? Gaming group? Gaming clan? I don't know what you call it.
I don't know. Is it a clan or is it a team?
A team. Well, Fnatic. I'm sure some of you have heard of Fnatic. What's interesting about this, and I think it's super interesting, is that most teams or clans or whatever you want to call them, they go out and get sponsors for their mouse, their keyboard, and stuff like that. Fnatic went the other route, and they've created their own brand called Fnatic Gear for their keyboard, mouse pad. And when they approached me, I kind of looked at their products, and I was like, because we've seen stuff like this in the past. Basically, it's an OEM keyboard and OEM mouse with like a logo on it.
Yeah.
And
Not really a lot to review there.
Yeah, it's just it's not good. But I got this keyboard, which I'll be taking a look at the Mini Streak, which is their 10 keyless keyboard. It's unlike most keyboards. It has features that I haven't seen on other keyboards. It's very well built. Cherry MX mechanical keys, RGB backlit. Like, it's a really good keyboard, and I'm really impressed. Because again, you just think, oh, they put their logo on some OEM keyboard, and it doesn't seem to be that way. And these look awesome. They have really great software, which is something that we don't see a lot of.
That's probably the biggest surprise, considering how hard it is for some of these huge companies to get their software.
Well, I think that's the biggest thing, is because their players are using this, right? So they need good software. They need a good product to compete in tournaments and things like that. Because if they're going to be if they're going to be using these products in tournaments, they want the best performance.
Yeah, it can't fail.
Yeah, so
that's the worst advertising possible.
Exactly. So that is, I'll be taking a look at that keyboard, and then also be taking a look at a very inexpensive solid state drive from Mushkin. It is their Source. I have the 500 gigabyte version, and this is their one that uses the 3D TLC NAND, and it uses the Silicon Motion SM2258XT controller. So basically, these are built, you know, to be a kind of a cost effective drive. So I'll be testing that out. And then possibly you'll have what cooler are you, the Corsair one?
It's the H100i Pro, which launched recently.
Yeah, just launched. Derek has the Corsair H100. Is it H100i Pro?
Yeah, iPro RGB, I guess. I still haven't yet figured out whether they want the RGB in the name or not. It's on all the title stuff, but
yeah.
I don't know if that's technically the product name.
And that's
it's obviously RGB, yeah.
That's their 240?
Yeah, it's a 240.
Okay, and that works with the new IQ software, right?
It does, yeah.
Okay, cool. So we'll have all that stuff for you guys coming up next week, so a busy week of pretty awesome products. So, of course, at the end of the podcast, we talk about, you know, if we did anything techie or cool or anything like that. Did you do anything cool or see any cool movies or anything?
I don't think I saw or did anything techie. I've been like really heavily browsing for, or shopping, I guess is the better word, for camera gear and stuff. I've got some lenses.
Nice.
New bag coming. So I'm going on a little bit of a hiking trip this weekend. So. Should be good, but no like real techie stuff.
Yeah, so sorry. I've been just working on reviews pretty much, so I've been building up
same.
Systems and tearing them apart. Working on a lot of video stuff, so you should see some videos. One launched today, you should see it on our pod or on our YouTube page, and we should have at least one more next week. So, trying to keep up with as we get into the busy season of tech when products are launching. You should see one, hopefully one video a week if I can keep up with it. So we'll have all that.
Nice.
So yeah. So guys, as I always say, we have our full show notes page that has everything that we talked about. So you can click through and get even more information. And if you're looking for us on your favorite podcasting app or website, it's just Think Computers, all one word. So until next week, catch you guys later.